Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Side 1 of For the Record program number 759, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 6, More About the Deep Fifth Column. This broadcast is being recorded on October 20th of the year 2013. We're going to continue doing what we did last week, which is relating some of the extraordinary maneuvering around the budget, around the debt ceiling, with the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, as I call him. As I reflect on the material for this program and on the future broadcasts, the material about Eddie the Friendly Spook, about the, quote, disclosures, unquote, of Edward Snowden, that is inextricably linked with a great many other things, and I'm going to do my best to try to do the impossible, which is to synopsize some of that in this program. Suffice it to say, for newer listeners, I was very ill. I had a major illness and surgery. I'm doing just fine. During the period, that accounts for the time that I was off the air. During the time that I was off the air, I was blogging away. If listeners would like to get a head start, a running jump, so to speak, on the subject material of a great many things, tremendous things going on in Europe, go to the SpitfireList.com website, go to the news and supplemental section. There is a wealth of material present there. I have already written what is literally the equivalent of a small book about the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, and so you can get a running jump on this. Also, increasingly with the advent of the internet, these broadcasts are meant to be interactive with the material on the website. One can only do so much in a one-hour radio program. Listeners are emphatically encouraged to use the material on the SpitfireList.com website, and beyond that, to get a hold of the flash drive with all of my life's work, plus the vitally important old anti-fascist books that are made available for download for free on very easy-to-use PDF files. Those of you who listen on non-commercial radio stations can support those stations by obtaining that flash drive and making a tax-deductible contribution to that station, thereby, I guess, killing two birds with one stone, supporting the broadcast outlet through which you get these programs, and also obtaining that material for yourselves. Those of you who listen on the internet can go to the top of any post or the top of the front page of the website, and there is a link through which you can get that flash drive. Now, we're going to jump back into the past, and then we are going to move forward into the present. Now, I've called this subtitle, this broadcast, More About the Deep Fifth Column. Some explanation about the origins of the term fifth column. It was generated during the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s as the fascist general Francisco Franco, who eventually won the war and became the fascist dictator of Spain until 1975, as his fascist forces were advancing upon Madrid, the capital of Spain, to finish their overthrow of the democratically elected Spanish Republican government. One of the Spanish generals was queried about the four different columns that were advancing on Madrid, and he noted that it was the fifth column inside of Madrid that would be decisive by opening the gates of that besieged city to the besieging fascist forces. So that is the origin of the term fifth column. Now, I am going to read in its entirety a post that I wrote on August 11th of 2013. This is available in the news and supplemental section and will be reproduced and linked in the description for the record 759. This is titled Snowden's Ride, Part 11, The Deep Fifth Column. Old leaks shed new light on the present. And first I write as commentary, a term that is essential for users of this website to comprehend is fifth column. The advance and success of fascism prior to and during World War II would not have been possible without the aid of the fifth columns. It is for that reason that books about fifth column fascist movements and activity are included in the books for download category. Vitally important, the long-forgotten books like Undercover and Cairo to Damascus by John Roy Carlson, Falange, The Secret Axis Army in the Americas by Alan Chase, Armies of Spies by Joseph Gollum, The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Rees, and Triumph of Treason by Pierre Coe shed light on the profound presence of Nazis, fascists, and their sympathizers within countries targeted for fascist conquest. As background to this discussion, we might coin the term deep fifth column, unquote. Powerful and dominant forces that saw fascism, or corporatism, as Mussolini termed it, as a wonderful solution to what they saw as problems, democracy and trade unions among them. Parenthetically, we note that ours is a failed civilization, at least at this point, one that has failed to take into account the great economic, political, and intellectual powers behind fascism. World War II is seen by our culture as an unfortunate event caused by a bunch of weirdos who got out of hand, unquote. It is for this reason that we include books about the altogether deadly and sadly eclipsed forces that caused the bloodletting in the Second World War, much of the global carnage that has ensued since that time, and the annihilating future that awaits our civilization if political inertia prevails. We also note that much of the success of the Underground Reich has been Germany's masterful strategic use of anti-communism and class warfare as a gambit to infiltrate and co-opt the power elites of countries targeted for subversion. Whereas anti-communism and class struggle are seen by American and other power elites as ends in and of themselves to realize corporatism, as Mussolini called it, Germany has used those as vehicles for conquest. We also note in this context that the fifth columns were never addressed in many countries. Just as Germany was never really denazified, the fifth columns were never rooted out in many other Western countries, including the United States, United Kingdom, and France. The fifth columns, the deep fifth columns in particular, were critical to the enabling and formation of what I call the Underground Reich. Listeners and users of this website should make it a point to download, print up, and read the books dealing with the deep fifth column. And then skipping down, noting how long and complex the series on Eddie the Friendly Spook is. It became a whole lot longer and a whole lot more complex in the post that I put up since August 11th, resuming with my commentary. It is less clear precisely who is the immediate intelligence controller of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This, by the way, noting that what Snowden is doing is really a very obvious intelligence operation. The controlling element is certainly the underground, right? As we move next week into the actual goals of what Eddie Snowden or the people running him are doing, this will become more clear. Resuming again, it is less clear precisely who is the immediate intelligence controller of Eddie the Friendly Spook, although BND, the German intelligence service, and the successor to the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit about which we have spoken so much and for such a long time, is almost certainly involved and appears to be the ultimate executive authority. The probability is very strong that a deep fifth column within U.S. intelligence, military, corporate, and above all political structure is involved. A recent and predictably slanted Wall Street Journal article dealt with a leak of naval intelligence secrets during the course of World War II, discussing the pivotal fact that U.S. intelligence had cracked the Japanese white code, not specified in the Wall Street Journal. Colonel Robert R. McCormick's Chicago Tribune leaked vital information about the U.S. war effort for the second time in less than a year. Having previously leaked the Rainbow Five contingency plan for U.S. mobilization and war-making documents for the Second World War, McCormick was a member of an organization called America First. Ostensibly isolationist and, quote, patriotic, unquote, in outlook, the organization was, in fact, actively funded by Third Reich intelligence and comprised for the most part of doctrinaire fascists who loved Hitler and Mussolini and hated Franklin Roosevelt with a passion. For a good understanding of the active, pro-fascist nature of American First, open Undercover by John Roy Carlson and use the Find function on your computer searching for America First. This will yield a good understanding of the nature of that organization and its members. As discussed in AFA program number 11, dealing with the origins of the John Birch Society, the probable source of the leak of the Rainbow Five program for American prosecution of World War II was General Albert Cody Wiedemeyer, one of its primary authors and an active America Firster. A linchpin of the China lobby, the associated MacArthur group in the military, and the milieu that coalesced ultimately into the John Birch Society, Wiedemeyer studied at the German Military Academy beginning in 1936, rented his German apartment from Gerhard Rossbach, one of the leaders of the Brown Shirts, the SA, and later, of course, Rossbach went to work for the CIA in the post-war period. Yet another point about Wiedemeyer set forth in AFA 11 is the fact that Ronald Reagan appointed Wiedemeyer as a special military advisor in the 1980s. In the book excerpt below, Wiedemeyer blames the leak of Rainbow Five on, of course, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, claiming that it was part of Roosevelt's plan to get the United States into World War II. Roosevelt was conveniently dead by the time Wiedemeyer held forth on the subject. This, by the way, is a major claim of the deep fifth column through the decades, since picked up and amplified by the pop conspiracy crowd. In his predictably self-serving analysis, Wiedemeyer does reveal something interesting about the networking in which Robert McCormick engaged. Wiedemeyer maintained that McCormick sent the Rainbow Five information directly to Adolf Hitler himself. Again, discussion of Snowden's ride per se is beyond the discussion of this post in and of itself. It is quite clearly a fascist and underground-like operation, with the ultimate executive authority being the BND, German intelligence, in all probability. It may be that an underground Reich fifth column within U.S. intelligence is involved, ultimately answering to BND. One important possibility entails Peter Thiel, whose Palantir company appears to be the developer of the PRISM software. Thiel embodies the concept of the deep fifth column, German-born, son of a chemical engineer from Frankfurt, Germany. Read IG Farben. That, by the way, was the locus of the corporate headquarters of IG Farben. Thiel has openly negated the concept of democracy, hates Obama, and is the chief financial backer of crypto-Nazi Ron Paul, to whose campaign Eddie the Friendly Spook contributed. The Palestinian Libertarian Organization are to be found at many levels of this concatenation. In addition, Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir and someone who appears to have been centrally involved in the development of Thiel's career, also has important historical touch points in Frankfurt, Germany. I then note that Palantir officially denies that their prism is the same prism used by NSA. Palantir is not only deeply involved with NSA, as we've seen, the company itself was developed in part in conjunction with the intelligence community. Peter Thiel is the chairman of the board, the largest investor. I would also note that Germany itself has been used, German intelligence, the BND, has been using a PRISM program, although they claim that that PRISM is not the same as the NSA's PRISM, and Palantir claims that their PRISM is not the same as the one used by NSA. So we're to believe that there are three separate software programs, all used for counterterror programs, all called PRISM. Long story made short, put that on your garden. Get a shovel and spread it around. It will make the vegetables grow. Continuing with the analysis here, that President Obama is dealing with a deep fifth column in these leaks is a possibility to be seriously considered. Now, the first text excerpt I'm going to read is from the Wall Street Journal of August 7th of 2013. It's called Echoes from a Past Leak Probe by Jess Braven, B-R-A-V-I-N. It reads in part as follows. Newly released documents provide a roadmap of how the government tried to mount a no-holds-barred legal attack against journalists suspected of leaking military secrets. But the memos weren't about the current-day Bradley Manning case. They came after a disclosure 71 years ago about World War II's Battle of Midway, and show the U.S. has long wrestled with how to square national security and press freedom. The Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, which advises the executive branch on the extent of its own powers, published in late July a selection of previously secret legal opinions spanning from 1933 to 1977. Among them were memos about a June 7, 1942 scoop in the Chicago Tribune by correspondent Stanley Johnston, who saw a naval intelligence file while traveling with the Pacific Fleet. Pentagon officials were stunned by the headline, U.S. Navy knew in advance all about Jap fleet, unquote, when they saw the story, which also ran in the Washington Times Herald. The article all but revealed one of the war's greatest secrets, that the U.S. had cracked the Japanese Navy's code. It reported the Japanese fleet strength was well known in American naval circles, unquote, and that the U.S. knew that the Japanese were likely to stage a feint against the Aleutian Islands, and as well that the advance, information enabled the American Navy to make full use of air attacks on the approaching Japanese ships, unquote. Navy Secretary Frank Knox wrote to then-Attorney General Francis Biddle demanding indictments. The headline alone discloses secret and confidential information to the detriment of our national defense, Mr. Knox wrote. Mr. Biddle then asked staff for advice, resulting in the just-released memos. Skipping down, the memos are noticeably silent on one possible pertinent point. Tribune's publisher, Colonel Robert R. McCormick, was an incendiary antagonist of the New Deal, and before Pearl Harbor at least, a vociferous opponent of intervention in World War II. Then from the book, from the American Heritage Magazine, rather, of December of 1987, The Big Leak by Thomas Fleming. Now, this is about Albert Covey Wiedemeyer and the release of the Rainbow Five program that we dealt with at length in AFA number 11. General Wiedemeyer, still erect and mentally alert, recalled the atmosphere he encountered when he walked into the munitions building at 7:30 a.m. on December 5th, 1941. That, of course, just before Pearl Harbor. Quote, "Officers were standing around in clumps talking in low tones. Silence fell, and they dispersed the moment they saw me. My secretary, her eyes red from weeping, handed me a copy of the Times Herald with Manley's story on the front page. I could not have been more appalled and astounded if a bomb had been dropped on Washington," unquote. Parenthetically, he was shocked. Shocked, unquote, as we saw in AFA 11, the parts of the report that he helped to draw up and that he had underlined in red were precisely the parts of the report that appeared in the article. Continuing with the account. For the next several days, Wiedemeyer almost wished a bomb had dropped and landed directly on him. He was the chief suspect in the leak of Rainbow 5, which within the closed doors of the War Department was called the Victory Program. He had strong ties to America First, the leading anti-war group in the nation, and as I would note parenthetically, financed in part by German intelligence. Continuing, both he and his father-in-law, Lieutenant General Stanley D. Embick, E-M-B-I-C-K, were known to be opponents of Franklin Roosevelt's foreign policy, which they thought was leading the United States into a premature and dangerous war. Later in this tumultuous morning, two FBI agents appeared in Wiedemeyer's office and examined the contents of his safe. Their eyes widened when they discovered the copy of the Victory Program with everything that had appeared in the newspapers underlined. The sweating Wiedemeyer explained that he had just done the underlining to get a clear idea of how much had been revealed. The two agents then began an interrogation of Wiedemeyer and other Army and Navy officers that continued for months. Several Army staff officers said they strongly suspected Wiedemeyer of being the leaker. An anonymous letter previously written by an insider and addressed by the Secretary of War accused Wiedemeyer and General Embick. Wiedemeyer's prospects grew even bleaker when the FBI discovered he had recently deposited several thousand dollars in the Riggs National Bank in Washington. By the way, over the recent years, members of the Bush family were directors of the Riggs National Bank, and it also has been a provisional repository of funds deposited by foreign embassies in Washington, D.C. Continuing, Wiedemeyer explained that it was an inheritance and went on manfully to admit to the FBI that he knew General Robert E. Wood, Charles A. Lindbergh, and other leaders of America First, and agreed with some of their views. He often attended America First meetings, although never in uniform. On December 7, 1941, the question of Rainbow Five's impact on American politics became mute. Japanese planes swooped out of the dawn sky to devastate the American fleet at Pearl Harbor. The Victory Program had envisaged devoting almost all of America's military strength to defeating Adolf Hitler in Europe. Japan, in that scenario, was to be handled by defensive strategies short of war. Then from a biography by Charles Higham, an autobiography by Charles Higham, whose work we have used before called In and Out of Hollywood, on page 212, we find, by the way, Burton Wheeler was an isolationist senator and a close associate of America First. Burton Wheeler, seeing the plan, this about Rainbow Five, Burton Wheeler, seeing the plan as a breach of neutrality and proof of FDR's illegal and superconstitutional behavior, in turn took the plan to another isolationist, Robert R. McCormick, owner and publisher of the Chicago Tribune, who who at once published it on the front page. Simultaneously, McCormick sent the plan to Adolf Hitler personally by Western Union. Adolf Hitler met with Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop and asked him if the existence of the plan called for immediate action. I think that there is a very, very strong parallel between the Palestinian Libertarian Organization and the America First Fifth Column. And I would note that just as the denazification of Germany is a myth, although Nazism is not, of course, taught officially in German schools, the power structures of Germany were never denazified. By the same token, the power structures in the United States and the United Kingdom, many of the elements of which actively supported the Axis powers in World War II, were also, the U.S. and the U.K. were never effectively denazified either. In the second side of this program, we are going to return to what I see as the Deep Fifth Column, the Palestinian Libertarian Organization. Ron Paul, again, has networked with Nazis, white supremacists, people who favored the Confederacy during the look with favor on the Civil War Confederacy, and are trying to promote a re-secession of the United States and a breakup of the United States. We will be talking about that in side two. We will also be once again taking a look at the damage that has been done to America's reputation, to the American economy, and that may very well be done in the future by some of the Republicans who in turn are allied with Ron Paul and the Palestinian Libertarian Organization. Eddie Snowden not only supported Ron Paul for president, contributed money to his campaign. Eddie Snowden's attorney, American attorney, is Bruce Fein, the chief legal advisor for Paul's 2012 campaign. Bruce Fein also formed a nonprofit organization with Edward Snowden's father, Ron Snowden. And Snowden's economic views, his get rid of Social Security, bring back the gold standard, are straight from Ron Paul and the Ludwig von Mises Institute. So I think looking at the past will inform us of the present, and we are going to be talking about the Underground Reich, as I call it, and the austerity policies advocated by the Republican Party and being enforced with absolutely devastating effect in Europe, something, by the way, that has been eclipsed by the disclosures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. When I talk about the Underground Reich, again, use the books on the website. You can either get those from a flash drive or download it directly from the SpitfireList.com website. The Nazis Go Underground by Kurt Ries from 1944. Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning from 1981. The New Germany and the Old Nazis from 1961 by T.H. Tettens. And an article from Covert Action Information Bulletin by Carl Oglesby called The Secret Treaty of Fort Hunt. That concludes side one, for the record, program number 759, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part six, subtitled More on the Deep Fifth Column, being recorded on October 20th of 2013. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.